Welcome to another edition of the 5-1 Volleyball Podcast. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Hope you watched lots of volleyball. Maybe you played some, played in a tournament or something. In today's podcast, like I'm going to try and do every Monday, we're going to talk about the Italian Super League. So if you're not familiar with pro volleyball, the Italian League on the men's side is generally considered the most competitive league in the world. And for sure this year it has been. It's been an absolutely crazy season. Tons of really talented teams going at each other. We had some great matchups this weekend, which I'm excited to talk about. And this weekend was our 17th weekend out of a 26 total regular season weeks we'll have in the Italian League. So we're getting pretty close to, you know, almost three quarters of the way through the season. We know mostly where teams are going to be at. There's a few teams still fighting for playoff spots, obviously. Teams fighting to maintain that home court advantage in the first round. But for the most part, we know where teams are going to be. We know who's contending for playoff spots, who's contending for the top spots in the league. And we had the first matchup of the weekend, go right into it. It was on Saturday, which was between Perugia and Lubeci Vitanova. Perugia recently knocked out of the top position by their game against Trentino last weekend, followed it up with another game against one of the big four, being Trentino, Perugia, Civitanova, and Modena. And I don't know whether this game was more of a Perugia win or a Lube loss, because it wasn't exactly the prettiest game ever, especially from the side from Civitanova Marche. So Perugia ended up winning 3-1, 25-23, 26-24, 18-25, 25-15 in the last set. Got kind of ugly towards the end there. And of course, I think the biggest news from this game, other than Lubeci Vitanova, people are starting to get a bit nervous about them, even though they're 14-3, not really that bad. But they are starting to, there's a gap is starting to open up between Perugia and the rest. But the big news is that Wilfredo Leon sets the all-time single-season aces record in the Super League. That's right, the single-season ace record. And as I said earlier, we're not even three quarters of the way through the season. So that's pretty insane. The record was set by Osmani Wantarina, who had 67 aces on the season. Wilfredo Leon tied it up, I believe, in the second set and then surpassed it soon after and had four aces for the match. It's pretty amazing what he's doing from a service perspective. Like, setting the all-time aces record in, like, the most competitive league in volleyball, and it's only three quarters of the way through the season, is absolutely unreal. And it's not like he's playing a ton of sets either. He's just averaging 1.15 aces per set. Like, even anything approaching one ace per set is rarely happens. I believe he was at about 0.75, 0.8 when he played in the Russian league the last season, which is already, that was already easily the first like place in the league. The person with the second most aces per set in the league is actually Wilfredo Leon's teammate, Alexander Tanasijevic. Which, you know, he's at 0.7 aces per set, which is already pretty crazy. Anything even close to one ace per set is unreal, and Wilfredo Leon is well above it at 1.15. He's at 70 aces on the season right now. Wilfredo's on pace for 108 aces this season. If he could pass 100, that'd be such a cool number for players in the future to try and beat. 100 aces in one season in the Italian Super League. It's going to be really tough for him, but, you know, I thought there was no way he would keep up the ace trajectory early on in the season when he was averaging over one ace a game, or one ace a set, and he has kept it up the entire time. It's actually definitely the most incredible thing I've seen recently. In the Italian League, he's a shoo-in for MVP. I don't think anyone even has a chance against him unless Uroš Kovačević goes on a historic run to end the season, but I think Wilfredo Leon's got the MVP wrapped up. It's going to set the all-time races record by like 30%. Oh man, what a player. And okay, go on a little Wilfredo Leon appreciation tangent there, but for real, this game, Perugia had 14 team aces in the entire game, which is a lot for four sets. That's pretty good. And Lubeci Vitanova, especially like Ioandrea Leo, was really struggling to pass. Osmani Wantarina do his usual. You know, he's a good passer, average passer, not fantastic. And then obviously Fabio Belasso, who, you know, he's all right libero, not great. Why he's on this Lupe Chifuentanova team, I feel like they could have gotten a better Italian libero, like Nicola Pessaressi, or even, honestly, my pick for most underrated libero, Domenico Cavaccini, I think would have been good on this team as well. Losing Grebennikov has hurt their passing line a lot, and Perugia really found their service again after they did not serve very well against Lupe Chifuentanova. It's a really good juxtaposition between those two games to see how much of an impact good serving has on Perugia's game. And Dzeko with five aces too. He was actually had more than Wilfredo Leon. And Dzeko, not the best server of all time, but sometimes he's very precise with his jump serve. So once he gets it going, it's hard to stop. Robert Landeskog, and good news for Lupe Chifuentanova, was actually had a good game, 9-for-11 with two blocks and two aces. So I said at the last podcast that he's not having the best season. I think I had in my YouTube videos, I had him ranked as the, I think, number two middle in the entire world. So he was not really providing his money worth for Lupe Chifuentanova, especially given how much effort they needed to use to get him out of his contract in Santa Cruz and have them play for him. And also, so Simon did play well, good bounce back game from him. But then we saw Yoandry Leal, 8-for-23 hitting, didn't pass the best, not the greatest game from him. And after he had a few good runs in a row, so the two Cubans have not really been able to play well together at the same time. Anyway, good 3 points for Perugia. They're only 2 points behind Trentino, who also picked up 3 points against Viva Valencia. Not much to say about that game. Trentino, obviously, if you've been watching, you know how unreal they're playing right now. Sreko Lizanac is a monster, had the MVP in that game. 3 kills, 3 blocks, 2 aces. He's actually... No, one of my criticisms is Lizanac has traditionally been his block, especially in comparison to how good he is at attacking and serving. But recently, Lizanac has been a monster blocker, reading sets really well. He knows the tendencies, it seems, of a lot of the hitters in the Italian League already. He's only been here 1 year, and it shows up in the stat sheet. And what doesn't show is how many touch blocks he's getting, how many continuations he's getting for his team. 10 aces for Trentino in that game as well. Really good serving by them. Valencia... I mean, like, had a decent start to the season, but again, it seems like the expectations that they set at the beginning of the season, it's kind of a random assortment of names, not the most talented team ever. Our other big Rye Sport matchup of the weekend was Modena versus Milano. And for those of you who didn't know, Milano's good now. I had a feeling they could play like this at the beginning of the season. They signed Stephen Marr and Trevor Cleveno on the outsides. They managed to re-sign Amir Abdelaziz. I thought he was going to be a for sure goner to one of the top four teams or maybe a good team in Russia or Poland. And they looked really good this game, sweeping Modena. Yeah, that's right. Modena got swept. 25-22, 25-22, 25-20. And Milano led for almost the entire game. The teams would be close until close to 20-20, and then Milano would just go on a really good run and protect their lead and finish out the game. So a couple interesting stats from this game. Namir Abdelaziz, 18-for-26 hitting. Really good job. He looked really good. He was hitting that cross-court shot a lot. He was really effective hitting back row balls from the C-ball position. Bit of a bounce-back game for him after a bit of a disappointing performance the last week. And of course, like I said, the Milano hitters all can't have a good game at once. So to pay for Namir having a good game, Stephen Meyer and Trevor Cleveno were a bit less effective than usual. Didn't matter, given how brutal Modena was at offense, though. Ivan Zaitsev, the biggest signing of the offseason in the Italian League, the biggest star, probably, in Italian volleyball, I would say he is. He was actually benched in the third set for the OG, Giulio Pinali. I don't know if it was a fair benching. I mean, it might have been partly Zaitsev himself. He has been a bit injured recently, so maybe he was like, okay, I'm not playing great, so... take me out, coach. We're not going to win this game anyway, but it'll be interesting to see if any news comes out about that next week, whether he was actually injured or they're just trying to, Velasco's trying to teach him a lesson. You know, maybe he didn't like the way he was playing or something, or didn't like the way he was interacting with his teammates. So yeah, it was a crazy game, Milano. Now they are only 5 ranking points behind Modena. Milano at 32, Modena at 37. Like I predicted last week, guys. If Milano won this game, and they did, they could actually have a realistic shot at getting to fourth place. They play Latina next. Obviously, should be a easy win for them. But then they play Padova, Perugia, then Civitanova. So I would expect of the next four games, I mean, probably they, if you were to bet on the better team right now, they would go 2-2. But it definitely could be potentially as bad as 1-3, given Modena's level of play recently. And, you know, Padova against Modena, that's not a guaranteed thing by any means. So it'll be interesting to see how they end up over the next few weeks. And then Milano, in contrast, has games against Castellina Grotte, Sora, Monza, and Siena next. So bottom feeders for three of their next four games. So if they go undefeated, Modena goes 2-2. The battle for fourth place could actually get really interesting. Not that it matters that much because, you know, they're going to play each other anyway, being the 4-5 matchup. So actually, it just really determines who gets home court. But Milano getting fourth would definitely be a statement. And I can tell you, all those passionate Modena fans are not going to be happy if their team is in fifth place to Milano. Because I think we've seen Milano as a bit of money to spend. I think they actually have a lot of potential, especially moving to their new arena soon. So I bet you the top four teams are scared of Milan kind of maybe having access to a bigger budget, more fan base. We could see a big five in Italy maybe. I think Milano has more potential than some of the other teams that have been close to the situation in the past. We had 3-5 setters this weekend, which is pretty exciting. First one I'm going to talk about is Ravenna versus Monza. Two teams fighting for a playoff spot. This is actually important for Ravenna to get 2 points instead of the one they would have gotten if they lost a fifth, because they are slowly kind of slipping out of that last playoff spot. They have 20 ranking points, which is three less than Padova in eighth place, so they need everything they can get. In this game for Ravenna, Camille Ricciacchi, who's now has moved to the outside position, still getting a ton of sets though, geez, 22-45, which is decent efficiency, not great. But where he really struggled with his passing, only 6% perfect receptions. I know he's switching positions midway through the season, and that's a tough ask. He's already not like a great passer anyway, definitely always been more of a physical offensive outside, even when he was playing on Luxembourg and with Masek last year. But he's going to need to shore it up a bit, because that's a pretty obvious weakness. Although he was getting mostly tough serves, I do think he got served less than the other passers this game. Argenta, and you know, he's starting to come back slowly. I think this is his third game back after he had that pretty severe injury at the end of the season last year for Modena. He only hit 7 of 23. I would be the first to tell you last season I thought Argenta, you know, he had so much potential, really young guy. I think he's a 95. Great scorer. Really actually challenged Giulio Sabbi last year, I think. Would have started over him had it not been for that injury that brought him out of the season. But you can see, I don't know if he's still injured. Doesn't look to have quite as much bounce. Doesn't seem to have all his athleticism back yet. 7 for 23. You know, that hurts from the outside position. Not great for him. This game in general, though, was not the most offensively talented game. Kind of stoppable force meets a movable object. 47% hitting for Monza and 43% for Ravenna. Generally like to see better than that. That's like high school team hitting numbers. Got to get those numbers up. But on the bright side for Monza, guess who's back? It's last year's Camille Ricciacchi. It's Paul Buchegger, the Austrian wonder kid who burst onto the scene last year for Ravenna, playing his old team. Played well this game, 14 for 28. Looked good. Looked like he was hitting the ball well. Great to see him back. That was a really unfortunate injury he had that he sustained this summer when he was playing in the European qualifiers for Austria. So he was at, what, six months, I think? It's not too bad. Monza was missing Oleg Plotnicki, though. He was playing in the European qualifiers that took place on last Wednesday. Talked about a bit about that in the last podcast. Not back yet. I'm sure he'll be back soon. Probably just wanted to spend a bit more time in Ukraine. I mean, maybe Monza should have asked for him back, because they probably would have won this game if he was there. Jacob Oboto did a decent job replacing him, but obviously it's not Plotnicki. Plotnicki is a monster. Next five-setter we'll talk about is Padova versus Sora. You know, Sora hasn't been the greatest team this year, but they certainly make a lot of opponents work for the victories. Pretty much the only good player for them was Dusan Pekovic. who had a few aces to go along with obviously his usual absurd number of attacking attempts. He plays pretty well, you know, just always in the shadow of other very talented Serbian opposites. But Padova, Yasin Luati, another overlooked player, plays for France and hasn't really been able to crack their Olympic squad or national team squad, given how many other talented French outsides there are. But this game, I'm telling you, Luati's good. If he was on a different country, he would be a easy starter for sure. He had 23 points on 60% hitting, pretty good. And then our Canadian guy, Riley Barnes, who recently joined the team a few weeks ago to replace the injured Luigi Randozzo. He didn't have the best game, I think 4 for 16 hitting. Again, he absolutely does not look that great in the attacking end. Like, serviceable. He had a few unlucky bounces here and there, but definitely not at the level that he was playing at in the 2017 World League. Not back to that yet. But he did get the match-winning ace in this match, as well as another ace earlier. So, you know, at least the serving's good. And Padova gets the 2 points in the rankings. They also need it, as I mentioned earlier. Radvina is closely on their tail with 20 points, and Padova not that far ahead with only 23. Last five-setter I'll talk about, Latina 3, Siena 2. Man, this Siena, they've been on the losing side of 6 five-set games this year, which is kind of unreal. Yeah, they've been in 7 five-setters. They've won 1, lost 6. So Maruf and company aren't really that clutch this year, which is tough because they're dangerously close to the bottom of the table, and I'm sure they would have liked to have some of those five-set victories back. Anyway, Ishikawa didn't have the best game. Only 14% for perfect passing, 11 for 28 hitting, although he did play well at the end. Just Siena's running a lot of out-of-system offense, and Ishikawa is the beneficiary, or I guess it's not maybe a good thing in this situation, but a lot of out-of-system high balls are going towards him, and he's good at that. He's a good player, but it's tough for undersides outsides to play out-of-system a lot. To make up for their lack of size, a lot of them like to play really high-tempo outside balls. Especially Maruf and Ishikawa run a really fast ball, really fast forward to the outside. So when he has to hit that many out-of-system balls, I mean, it's kind of his own fault. He's not passing well. Nobody was passing well this game for Siena. I can see why he's not hitting at the most efficient pace. And then, interestingly enough, for Latina, no Swan Engapet today. But we did see Philippe Govenda, who we haven't really got to see a lot this season. And for Tonček Stern, who has been struggling a lot, especially in efficiency and in terms of making errors, Govenda from Slovakia came in and did a pretty good job. 11 for 22 hitting for 50%. Yeah. Not incredible, but considering Stern barely cracks 40% most of the games this season, I would say an improvement. So it'll be interesting to see if they keep going with him, or, you know, they probably paid a decent amount of money for Stern, so maybe that's why they've kept him in the rotation for so long. And then the last game I'm going to talk about in terms of recaps, not the most interesting one, Verona beats Grote in 4 sets. Boye leads the way, 18 of 36 hitting, which has been better than his usual efficiency this season, although I would like to see better against a team that has not won a single game guaranteed relegation this season for Grote at 0-17, not the greatest. Boye also had 6 blocks, pretty impressive for a guy who's only about 6'5", but he has excellent timing, obviously great vertical, was just reading the sets really well and getting out to his spots. Grote, though, they would have had an excellent roster for Series A2, but not going to cut it for the Superliga. I will say, though, I think their roster is actually a lot better than their one last year. I think the whole bottom of the league this year is actually a lot more competitive, because there were some, oh man, there's some brutal players playing for Grote last year. Robert Casanenga, Bruno Canuto. This team is a lot more fun to watch, even if they haven't actually won a single game yet. But the team most likely to replace them, Brescia, is currently sitting at 13-2, Series A2. For those of you who aren't familiar with European sports, they have a multi-tiered league system, so there's actually an entirely separate second league. It's not like a farm system either. It's like it's legit own other league. But if you win that league, you get bumped up to the Superliga, which is the one we talk about on the show. and the bottom place team, the Superliga, gets bumped down to Series A2. And there's a lot of incentives that and benefits to playing in the top league, including obviously sponsors are just way more interested in your team if you are playing in the Superliga. You'll get way better players interested in playing for your team because everyone wants to play in that top league. You'll have more money to spend because more fan support, more sponsor support, you get better players. We saw Siena completely change their entire team, for better or for worse. But it's a concept that I think would be amazing in North American pro sports. Too nice right now. In the NBA, you're the worst team in the league, and instead of getting sent to the G League, you get the first overall draft pick. You get to pick the best player in the world, the best 19-year-old in the world to play for your team. Doesn't seem like a punishment for losing. Anyway, looking ahead to next week's games, which will take place on the 20th of January, the biggest one by far is going to be Trentino versus Lubici Vitanova. I mean, just looking at it, you have to go with Trentino. That's probably going to win. One team's trending way up. One team's trending way down, even though they're only 14-3. I have to say that every time we rip on Lubici Vitanova, because got to keep it in perspective. They've still won 11 more games than they've lost. But if Lubici Vitanova loses this game, especially because, you know, they have their new coach and not much has changed after Madej was fired. If they lose this game, it's going to be Juan Torena is probably going to make a elaborate Instagram post. You know, there'll be more debates on whether De Hulst should start over Bruno. Leao will be waking up in cold sweats after shanking 10 Sreko Lizanac serves in a row. It won't be good. But on the flip side, if Lubici Vitanova does beat Trentino here, that will eliminate a lot of the hand-wringing and fans and players feeling bad for themselves, which I'm kind of sick of, to be honest. Lubici Vitanova is still a really good team, guys. They're still, like, arguably have the most talent per position than any other team in the entire league. All they need to do is maybe they can play well for a month during the playoffs, so they'll still be fine. You know, it's tough from a mental perspective for them because, you know, they've lost in the finals of the Club World Championships. They lost in the finals at last year's Italian League Championships. They lost in the finals of the Champions League last year. So yeah, they have lost a lot of finals, and I get that wears on the mentality of the player and also the fans. But you have to remember, they also got to the finals of those competitions. It's not like they're languishing away, about to be relegated. Silver medals are still good, guys. I know it's tough. I know you want to win the top award, but the top championships, but maybe they're not playing up to like the absolute peak. Yoandrew Leal, Robert Landis-Simon, Bruno, Osmani Wantarena. Because yeah, saying Sokolov, like saying that aloud, you realize that they are a ridiculously, ridiculously talented team. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to that matchup. That's happening on Sunday. That's going to be on Rai Sport. They're playing in Trento. You know those Trentino fans are going to be super loud. So that'll be definitely the watch of the weekend. And then, you know, most of the other games, Perugia, Siena. Obviously, Perugia is going to blow them out. Might not even see them sitting some of their starters. Could also maybe potentially see Leon add a few more aces to his record. Verona, Sora. Verona should win that. Can't see any reason why they wouldn't. And then our other big game of the weekend is going to be Monza versus Padova. And that's actually going to happen on the Saturday on Rai Sport too. And these are two teams. Padova at 23 points, Monza 24 points. You know, Ravenna's sneaking up behind. Camilla Ricciolecchi and the crew, they're lurking. They're waiting for an opportunity to strike, get that eighth playoff spot, which they got last year. You know, they want it. Ravenna and 8th playoff spots. Name a more iconic duo. So anyway, those two are going to... 3 points for either one of these teams would go a long way to securing a playoff spot. And both teams have looked really good at moments in the season and really quite pedestrian at other points in the season. It'll be obviously be nice to see Bucheger back, and hopefully Potnishki will be back with the team next week for Monza. So, you know, a full-strength Monza. Potnishki, Zavronik, Bucheger. Obviously, the big man in the middle, Yosifov. They could actually be a really good team. I could definitely see them taking a game, match off one of the top four teams in the playoffs. Excited to see in Padova, Maurice Torres. Can never, ever count him out. And I was saying earlier, Riley Barnes and Yassine Lawati, when they're playing well, are really dangerous. Riley Barnes. We've seen peak Riley Barnes before. This guy could be really good. Remember, this is a guy at 2017 World League who was starting over Stephen Marr and Nick Hogue. If he can get back to that level, I think he's arguably, he hasn't been at a point in a while, but I think he could be better than Luigi Randazzo. Obviously not as an offensive player, but just holistically. Unlikely, given that he hasn't played that way at all after his disastrous season last year in Russia. Didn't really play with the national team this summer, and then was injured most of this year. Probably will take him a while to get to that point. But if he can get even 90% of the way there before the playoffs, you know, Padovic could make some noise. Good matches in the Italian League this weekend. The big four teams, some of them are looking pretty beatable right now. It's a vulnerable point in the schedule, so we'll see if that trend continues next weekend. Other stuff I have going on right now, if you want to check out a written recap that goes in even more detail. Actually, I don't know if it's more detail, but if you like reading versus talking about stuff, check out Tommaso's recap that'll be posting on the site. He'll give you a breakdown of all the stats, a really detailed breakdown, I'm going to assume, of the Milano versus Modena and Perugia versus Lubi Nova game, so go check that out. I also made a post recently. If you're listening to this podcast and for some reason you're not watching any of the games, check out the blog post on my website, 51vb.com, called How to Watch Pro Volleyball in 2019. I'll give you a really in-depth guide about how to follow all of the big leagues in volleyball, and especially important, how to watch them, where to watch them. So if you're looking to watch the Italian League, do a quick breakdown. This is how you would do it. The main matches that we talk about, the ones I focus on, are generally broadcast by an Italian sports broadcaster called Rai Sport, subsidiary of Rai, which is just a big Italian television company. So if you follow the link in that article to Rai Sport, you should be able to get there. However, this is for Italian citizens only, so you either need to be an Italian citizen or at least make it look like you are one while you're watching. And those games are all like really well professionally done. They're all in HD. They have multiple replay angles, just amazing commentators. My Italian's still not that good, but some of the stuff when I do pick up on it is pretty funny, and they have a lot of energy, even if you don't understand Italian. And then there's also 11sports.it, which broadcasts the rest of the games. Fortunately, these aren't generally as good quality. I think they've upgraded a lot of the streams from 720 from 480 last year, so at least they have that going for them. But usually it's just a local announcer, and also they don't really have any replays. It's generally only one camera above the center line that they do. But it's good if you're a hardcore fan, and if you're listening to this podcast, probably a decent chance that you're a hardcore fan of Italian volleyball. So yeah, those are the two main sources if you want to be actually watching the games. They go on at Sunday at noon if you're Eastern time, 9 a.m. if you're Pacific time, and that's if you're North America. And then if you are listening to this from CET, they are played at 6 p.m. generally. So if you want links to the resources I talked about, or if you want to check out, there's a lot of other pro volleyball leagues in the world, guys. It's not just Italy. If you want to check that out, check out that blog post, How to Watch Professional Volleyball in 2019 on 51vb.com. That's going to be it for me today. Thanks for listening.